On this episode of Finding Christ in Cinema, we get ready for the Tri-Wizards Tournament and the return of He Who Must Not Be Named in Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. Does the old manky boot of a Portkey represent the straight and narrow way? Should Harry and Ron forgive each other 70 times 7? All that and more in 3, 2, 1. Admission is free. Grab a bowl of popcorn, extra butter, of course, and find a seat smack dab in the middle. It's time for Finding Christ in Cinema, episode number 30. I'm Michael.
And I'm a Brendan Taylor.
Join us and together we'll dig deeper into the silver screen classics of yesteryear, as well as the box office hits of today. We'll take a closer look at the stories they tell and see if we find the face of Jesus looking back. We're going to explore the deeper meanings of these films, their plots and their twists, the characters and their choices, and how we can relate them to the gospel of salvation and ultimately our Christian walk. You're tuned in to Finding Christ in Cinema on the GCT Network.
Is your Great Commission transmission.
Brendan Taylor, this is take two of Finding Christ in Cinema, episode number 30. We had a great show just a few minutes ago.
It was an excellent
show. I hope that we can replicate that.
Man.
Hey, you know what? Because now we're pressed for time, I wasn't able to do, you know, I was going to do my NPR impression. In fact, I want to make FCC NPR friendly from now on. So it'd be, hey, come on in. Admission is free. Grab a bowl of popcorn, extra butter, of course. That intro could be about 9 minutes long. What have you been up to this past week?
Oh, man, this has been busy. Finished up Haunted Murfreesboro last week.
Man, how was that?
It was excellent. It was really cool. I think my biggest group for the weekend was 18 people.
18 people. So now you actually lead them through the town square or what?
Yep, around the town square. A little bit.
Do you carry a flashlight and put it up in your face?
I don't. Some of them, some of them do. Some of them have like those little Coleman.
Oh, so I'm not being original.
Well, some of them use like the Coleman lanterns.
Yeah. They're supposed to use a turnip carved out with a candle inside. That's where the jack-o'-lantern came from.
You know what? Anyway, so we so we walk around the square and then a little bit. I go into the Main Street District, the historic district, and then down to the Vine Street Cemetery. And then and then come back up.
Nice.
It is pretty cool. And always, well.
Well, how long is that? 10, 15 minutes?
Nope. It's about an hour. And depending on how big your group is and how interactive they are. For example, my group of 18 people, that tour lasted an hour and 30 minutes.
Wow.
And it was pretty cool.
So you go, you'll walk and then you stop in front of a place and just say, and here, let me tell you something about.
Yeah.
Wow. Do you allow people to interact with you?
It depends on the kind of crowd it is. For example, not saying all college kids do this, but most of them will not interact with you because they are on their smartphones. However, if it's like a family who's come with a couple of younger kids who are just so wrapped up in the stories, and then the adults themselves get wrapped up, and you can kind of see that magic, it's really cool.
Nice. How do you come up with the stories for these places? Are these actual real stories associated with each place?
Not with each specific place, because we aren't. We've been asked not to reveal which story happens at which certain spot for the privacy.
Okay.
For the privacy of the people who either live in that house or who operate that said business.
I got you. Especially a homeowner, yeah.
Yeah, they've asked for their privacy, and you know, they're letting us use their story, and we want to honor that.
Absolutely.
So, but we will, like I said, I go down the East Main Street District, and I'll stop at a bunch of the churches because they're public places, and I can just point down Main Street and people get the visual of all the old houses.
Oh man, I wish we would have gone. You did that the last year, didn't you?
Yeah.
So you're up there every year.
This is my fifth year doing
that. Is awesome. Awesome. Hey, you know, tomorrow is a big day in the life of Brendan Taylor and all of his many fans.
Yes.
What's going on?
It is the birthday
of Halloween.
Well, that too. But 25th birthday, quarter life crisis.
Quarter.
I mean, it's not really a crisis.
There's nothing to have a crisis over at 25. Nothing.
So yeah, and then I'll be working tomorrow, but I'll probably I'll probably let the birthday sink in at the professional storytelling gig that I have Saturday night.
Are you taking Abby with you?
No.
Did it land on Abby or what?
She's staying home.
Nice. Hey, well, last weekend was my son's birthday, and one of the things that we did, we love family movies in our home and family movie time, and so my wife said, "What do you want to watch?" Well, you know what? Not actually a movie, but they just released on Netflix The Day of the Doctor, which is a Doctor Who special. It's a big one in the canon because you have three doctors in the presence of each other working together. They're the same person, Brendan, but three incarnations of the same person. Now, the neat thing about Doctor Who is that they are, even though it's the same doctor, well, it's the same essence, it's really different people. Because each doctor, when before he's about to transmorph or whatever it is into the next incarnation, he doesn't know, what he's going to be. And when he comes out of it, he says, "What kind of a man am I? I don't know who I am." He has to discover it. So it's really neat. But what it did was it got me back into the Doctor Who. I mentioned last episode that I had taken a long sabbatical as I was mourning over the loss of David Tennant, the 11th Doctor, and then I watched the first episode with Matt Smith as the 12th Doctor, wasn't impressed, and decided to take another sabbatical. Well, after watching Day of the Doctor, I'm going back in heavy now. I'm looking forward to it. What else is going on with you?
Well, I've had a little time to do some reading, some listening to some audiobooks, and I just finished Surprised by Scripture by N.T. Wright.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hey, okay, biggest takeaway point. What really hit ya?
What's really hitting me right now, and I'm having to re-listen to this part over and over again, is how N.T. Wright sees God using the arts as stuff to point back to his beauty as he originally created it, and then as it will be with the new heaven and the new earth.
Beautiful.
Because right now I love the way I love the way Paul puts it in Romans 8. We're going through a period of groaning like childbirth, groaning with the pains of childbirth. And when this child is actually born, it'll be the new heaven and the new earth, and we'll all have our resurrected, glorified bodies, and it's going to be awesome because we're going to be dwelling in the same space with God, our Father. And
Amen.
How he incorporates arts into pointing to that is really getting me right now.
Wow, yeah, great thoughts from N.T. Wright. He's just the way he's able to, he's our generation's C.S. Lewis.
Yeah.
Do you feel that?
I feel it, but sometimes I wonder if I'm just feeling it because he's a portly English gentleman.
Yeah, well, who is, the C of E, and I mean they're very, the similarities are striking between the two. Okay, so you finished that. What are you going on to?
Well, I've actually already finished what I went on to. I finished that on the ride in from Shelbyville, Forgotten God. Francis Chan.
Francis Chan is amazing.
Yeah.
Crazy Love. What's that series that he did? We did a Bible study, a couple years ago. He's just
very prolific.
And just, he can talk in the common parlance.
Yeah.
And explain huge things in a way that is more accessible. And mm-hmm. I just really appreciate that from him. Okay, so you're doing a whole lot of reading.
And a whole lot of writing.
What?
I wrote a book.
Oh!
Just kidding, not yet. However, that is the challenge with National Novel Writing Month.
Tell us about this real quick.
Well, NaNoWriMo, as it's abbreviated, is an event during the month of November in which participants can win by writing 50,000 words throughout the whole month. And I did the math.
Okay.
That equivalates.
No, that's not right.
That's not a right word. That means 1,700 words a day.
Okay. So I'm trying to 1,700 words. Okay, so that's an extra long blog post.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. Like for example,
that's a lot of writing.
The new Fury review.
Yes.
On the Monday movie review. That's only 600 words and some change.
Okay.
So thinking triple that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a lot. However, it's a lot of creativity involved.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm feeling a story coming out.
So, okay.
I will be participating with our very own. With FCC's very own John Carney.
Yay! All the kids say, every time you say John Carney, the kids do that.
Yep. And he talked about it during Daddy's Dying, Who's Got the Will.
Okay.
So I'll be doing it with him and a couple other people from the cast. And we're going to hopefully win.
And this is all November?
It's all November.
Okay, so you're going to keep us up to date on that?
I will keep
that?
You up to date.
Yep. On Finding Christ in Cinema. Hey, we have some updates on the Finding Christ in Cinema website. What have you been up to over there?
Well, you may want to get that reverb ready because something has been published.
The list! Oh, finally!
Yes.
The legendary list. People didn't even believe that it was a real thing.
I thought it only existed.
They always thought it was a euphemism.
And myth and legend.
Yes. and frivolity. And hilarity.
Would you say well-mannered frivolity?
Oh, well, you know what?
Well-mannered frivolity.
Yes. Oh, Maggie Smith, I love you. Yes, the list has been published. And on this page, it's divided into two parts.
Okay.
First is the list. And the list...
No, wait.
Oh, first, sorry. Okay, hold on. First is...
The list!
Which is comprised of every film that not only that we've put in there ourselves, but that you guys, the listeners, have requested.
Right.
Under the list is the index. And that is the secondary list that shows the episodes that we've done. It's linked to those episodes, to those pages
for
on the
quick
website.
Reference.
Yes.
Okay. And what's the third part of the page?
There was only two.
No, there are three. And the third part is the comment section. So listeners can participate and add to and comment on and just generally interact with us on the list. The list. Yes, a lot of good things. So you can go, a direct link to that is fcc.gctnetwork.com/list, or just go to christincinema.com and up in the, it's underneath the podcast tab. You just hover over that and it'll drop down. You'll see the list. The list. And something else under, a link to our real news videos.
Oh, yeah.
Easy link to that. So so there you go. Get over to christincinema.com, and all that good stuff is over there. Anything else? Have we missed anything else, Brendan?
Well, just to elucidate on the Monday movie review.
Yes.
I did go to the movies this week and saw Fury, the World War II picture.
With?
Brad Pitt, Logan Lerman, and... Shia LaBeouf.
Oh, Neil White.
Boo! Boo!
So it's a bad movie then?
No, it's not. It's not. I initially thought...
Well, wait a second. Transformers are bad movies.
Okay, now hold on.
Indiana Jones Part 4, bad movie.
Okay, now...
Shia LaBeouf.
You know what you are doing?
No.
You are keeping a record of wrongs.
Oh, no! Is that a little foretaste of Glory Divine?
Yeah! No, but I will... Really quick, I will
say... Hey, this is better than the last episode.
Right? I will say that I was very impressed by Shia's performance.
Okay.
And I was impressed by Brad Pitt.
Hey, I just heard on Theonauts a couple episode ago or so that Shia LaBeouf is now
converted.
A professing Christian.
Yes.
So.
And I wonder how much that has to do with his role in the film.
Because, meaning what, for publicity?
No, because his nickname in the film is Bible.
Huh.
And he may have... And if this is how it happened, I don't know how Shia LaBeouf's mind works.
Shia LaBeouf's buff.
I don't know how Shia LaBeouf's buff works, but I don't know how Shia LaBeouf.
Do you need a mulligan?
Yeah, give me that.
All right.
I don't know how Shia LaBeouf's mind works.
Does anybody?
However, I would be very impressed to hear if his conversion had something to do with his studying.
For the
character.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
And then studying the material straight from the Bible.
Yeah.
that having a reverse effect into Shia himself?
Well, hey.
That would be a question I would like to ask Shia, should he ever become a guest on our show.
Well, make it happen, number one.
Okay.
All right, anything else?
No, that's it.
How about, are you ready for some real news finally?
Roll it, baby. Marvel Studios has announced its plan for Phase 3 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
What's Phase 3?
Well, Michael, if we look at the phases previously,
okay.
Phase 1 ended with the Avengers.
All right.
Phase 2 will end with Avengers 2.
Ah.
You see where I'm going?
I see that little pattern there.
So I'm believing the Avengers are the individual climaxes for each phase.
Okay, so Phase 3.
On Tuesday, October 28th, at a special event held at the El Capitan Theater in Hollywood, Marvel Studios president Kevin Feige took the stage to announce the full slate for Phase 3 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, featuring a mix of fan-favorite characters along with a number of heroes set to make their big screen debut from now all the way to 2019.
Wow.
And the article in the show notes takes you to the Marvel homepage that has the list of the 8 headlines, which I'm going to read. We may briefly expound on them. We may not. Here we go. Number 1, Marvel pits Captain America and Iron Man in a cinematic civil war.
That just gave me goosebumps.
I know it.
Oh.
Number 2, Marvel's Doctor Strange.
And we have a Doctor Strange.
Conjures up a November 2016 release date. And who is that Doctor Strange?
It's FCC's very own.
Sherlock himself.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Benedict Smug.
Yes.
Sherlock Cumberbatch.
There you go.
Con!
And I just see him. It just makes sense to me. I know that FCC's very own Joaquin Phoenix was in run for that. But, you know, when they got it to him, he finally, his final comment was,
I'm a miracle man.
I'm not a magician. I'm a miracle man. Okay, carry on.
Number 3, Guardians of the Galaxy to return sooner than expected. You're welcome.
Huh, is that in the headline?
That's in the headline.
Okay.
Number 4, Thor brings Ragnarok to the Marvel Cinematic Universe in 2017.
Oh, wow.
Number 5, and here's a new character, Chadwick Boseman to star in Marvel's Black Panther.
Yeah, I'm going to have to look into this one. I'm familiar with Black Panther.
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with Chadwick.
Me neither. Number 6, Captain Marvel.
Shazam! Starring Jim Neighbors.
No.
Well, golly.
Captain Marvel soars into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Number 7, Marvel's Inhumans to populate the big screen.
Like Gandalf, I have no recollection.
Well, a lot of people didn't have any recollection of Guardians of the Galaxy, but look at them now. Number 8, Marvel's Avengers head into an Infinity War.
And that is, rumor says...
it's not a rumor. It is confirmed.
Two parts. Wow.
One in 2018, the other in 2019.
Man! We've got fodder for Finding Christ in cinema for now until Kingdom Come. Something under the radar, Brendan. The Coen Brothers' 1950s period piece, Hail Caesar, has a release date. Now, back in May, that's why this is under the radar, we missed this. Back in May, Deadline.com reported that Joel and Ethan Coen were working on a film set in 1950s Hollywood entitled Hail Caesar. The comedy tells the tale of one Eddie Mannix, a, quote, fixer, unquote, who, well, fixes problems that the studio he works for, any given studio, may have with their assets, red stars. Much like Fred Otash, the famed 1950s private investigator who worked for Confidential Magazine and was the muckraker of the time, using wiretaps to spy on movie stars and gather dirt. And so you can see where this movie is going. But check this out. Josh Brolin, George Clooney, Ralph Fiennes, we'll talk about him in a few minutes. Tilda Swinton, we haven't even hit Narnia movies yet, but they're overtly Christian. Channing Tatum, Scarlett Johansson, and Jonah Hill star in The Pick that follows a single day in the life of a studio fixer who is presented with plenty of problems to fix. The Coen brothers wrote, directed, and are producing the film that is, well, I guess they're writing. Producing, directing. It's slated for February 5th of The Magic Year 2016. Soon to be overtaken by 2017.
Yeah.
If not already. Does that sound intriguing to you?
It does. It really does.
We both skipped over the original story because I don't think anything was... It didn't really tell us anything.
Yeah, we were just... Oh, another Coen Brothers.
Hmm. Yeah. Now, I wonder... Did they do No Country for Old Men?
Yes.
I hope it's not like that.
Well,
this is a comedy. So,
well, no, it says comedy, but I'm thinking it might be one of those black comedies.
I was kind of thinking, well, maybe kind of like a Pulp Fiction vibe or something.
Hey, you know, we'll find out.
Yeah, we sure will.
Let's go down to the rumor mill. Pick a little toggle, pick a little toggle, cheat, 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 talk a lot, take a little more. From Empire Online, could we see more Hunger Games films even after the Mockingjay finale?
I could.
In a recent interview with Empire, series director Francis Lawrence discusses the notion of continuing stories from Pan Am even after the original trilogy's resolution.
It's a huge universe.
It is a very huge universe. To quote Lawrence, the world of Harry Potter, he uses Harry Potter as an example.
Yes.
In the world of Harry Potter, there's a lot to that world that you can explain. You can understand the appeal of telling another story, but can you actually do it without Harry, Hermione, and those characters? Oh, now, why'd he leave out Ron? Will people care as much? And I guess you could say the same thing about the Hunger Games world. There are a lot of past games and a lot of this world, but without Katniss, is it the same?
The haircut to it.
You're telling me.
Hey, no, he's making a great point. But now we've been talking about Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Yeah.
Okay. So there you go. The stories that take place pre Ron, Harry, and Hermione. Now, of course, it would be nice to have that whole series of movies be. Seeing those three characters sitting down and reading bedtime stories to their kids or something, that would be awesome.
That would be
pretty
cool.
Hey, let me tell you about, you know, whatever his name is, Scrimmage, Salamander.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What else?
Oh, well, for the complete interview, check out EmpireMagazine.com.
Yeah, you'll find the link to that and all
or
the other stories.
Or EmpireOnline.com.
Sorry. There you go. Yeah. The link to that and all the other stories that we cover in our show notes over at ChristInCinema.com. And there's always that link at the bottom of the blog post that'll get you to our actual spreadsheet, what we're actually using right now for our show notes and whatnot. Hey, Deadline.com. Kelsey Grammer as King Herod in Killing Jesus. Bill O'Reilly wrote a book. Bill O'Reilly. I goofed that up.
I wrote a book.
Yeah, and for the sound clip of that, you want to get over to Theo Knott's podcast, and you can hear them.
Well, I think I do a fair job.
You can hear Bill O'Reilly saying,
I got a book. Oh, darn it, I messed up.
So anyway, National Geographic Channel is adapting Killing Jesus, the best-selling book that chronicles the life of Jesus during a time of intense political and social conflict in the Roman Empire that ultimately led to his death. So Kelsey Grammer has been cast as King Herod, the, quote, unrelenting and ambitious Roman king of Judea who attempted to kill Jesus at his birth, unquote. The four-hour mini series also stars FCC's very own John Rhys Davies as Annas, one of the high priests in Jerusalem who first questioned Jesus and his teachings. Now, we did some research before the show because we both know there were two high priests. One was real and one was appointed.
And Annas was the appointed one.
Right.
Caiaphas was appointed by the Roman government,
right,
under King Herod, under Pontius Pilate,
and so he was no high priest.
He was more of a high puppet.
He was, yes, he was the people's priest.
Yes,
versus God's priest. So you can look for this miniseries, my curiosity has piqued.
Yes,
and
yes.
We don't cover TV shows on Finding Christ in Center generally.
Not a lot.
Not as a rule. So you can look for this next year. Pretty neato. Pretty neato. Any other news?
I think it's time to go to the movies.
Let's do it.
To a legendary event, the Triwizard Tournament, during which time a single student gets to represent his or her school in a series of magical contests. Eternal glory awaits the student who wins the tournament.
Dark and difficult times lie ahead, Harry. Soon we must all face the choice between what is right and what is easy.
Oh,
between what is right and what is easy. I love that line.
Well,
I love it.
You know, coming from the second best Dumbledore ever, that is the...
Whoa, sir. Sorry.
What do you mean?
I think Michael Harris does a better job.
Richard Harris, no!
What did I do? Michael Harrison and Richard Gambon. Oh, how could I get them mixed up?
I know, because one precedes the other in all ways.
You know what? Give me that mulligan.
Hey, you know, okay, here we go.
You're a mulligan abuser.
Whoa, Michael. Second best Dumbledore?
Yes.
No, I think Michael Gambon is a better Dumbledore than Richard Harris.
You haven't finished reading all the whole book series, so you have no say in it.
You know what? I don't think actors are needed for those characters.
Hey, for the second time of discussing this film today within the last couple of hours, I'd like to point out once again that it's the least favorite of my movies.
But, Michael, it's one of the best books.
It is probably the best book as far as I am concerned, and that therein lies the problem. Brendan, because there's so much background information, so much going on inside of the characters, so much. I mean, all the things that you learn about Tom Riddle's family. Whoa! I mean, that is juicy, meaty stuff. That makes perfect sense when you're watching the movie and seeing the whole opening sequence that I'm going to talk about here in just a few minutes. What were they doing in that, you know, that ramshackle old mansion with that old caretaker getting all feisty because they interrupted his late night tea? This book is chock full of stuff. The movie is good. The movie's great. The movie's better than most other movies out there. It just happens to be the worst of the
worst
films
in this film series.
Yeah. What do you think?
And that really speaks a lot about the film series itself, because it just shows how good it is.
It's fantastic. You know, this is the fourth episode.
We're halfway done.
We're halfway done
in the Wizarding World.
Wow.
Oh, no, actually, no, we can't say that because Fantastic Beasts hasn't come out yet.
Yeah. So. All the kids say, more Wizarding World. But you know what? As we've gone along here, we are purposely not hitting the gold mine that we can pull out of the Harry Potter movies, because we're saving that for the grand finale when we get to the Deathly Hallows. So we're shying away from certain themes, and we're just pulling out these little nuggets that you can use in your personal ministry as you are sharing the gospel, the good news with friends, as you're sitting on that double-decker couch watching Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire and all the movies proceeding up to this point. So we are leaving you ample room to find your own Christian themes in these films. Brendan, before we jump into the meat and potatoes, do you have any other observations that you need to make? Other than this,
you know what?
The second best Dumbledore.
You know what? We're going to move from Michael Gambon, the better Dumbledore, to Brendan Gleeson.
Oh!
Mad-Eye Moody.
Yes!
What?
Okay.
You want to bring up the point that I...
Yeah.
Okay.
That we did on the last time we did this show.
Yeah. about an hour or so.
Yeah, the last time we did episode 30.
The thing about Brendan Gleeson in this film is that he not only has to do Mad-Eye Moody as a character, As an actor, Mad-Eye Moody, hold on. As an actor, Brendan Gleeson does not only have Mad-Eye Moody, the character, he also has to portray Barty Crouch Jr.
But more than that, he has to portray David Tennant portraying Barty Crouch Jr. So it's even another level deep.
Yes. And
and you can see it come through. It has a translucence to his.
I like that word.
I mean, his ability to allow Barty Crouch Jr., hence David Tennant, to come through in his performance is amazing.
Yeah.
So that is, I mean, that's three levels deep, right? Because he's playing Mad-Eye Moody. More than that, he's playing Barty Crouch Jr. playing Mad-Eye Moody. But more than that, he's playing David Tennant playing Barty Crouch Jr. playing Mad-Eye Moody.
Yes.
And it's amazing. A joy to watch. That is a man. Makes me want to see that. We watched that that preview together of that film that he was in, Calvary.
Oh, Calvary. Yeah,
where he's an Irish priest.
Yeah, I do want to see that.
Yeah, that looks good. What else?
Oh, that's really all I can remember from the last episode.
Okay. When I watched, I knew we were going to do this movie. I put it on my iPad, so I can watch it wherever I am. First thing I noticed is, man, this is a long movie. It's a long movie, and there's going to be, just like all the other ones that we've watched so far, so many things in it to draw from, so many themes, so many allegories, so many metaphors, so much to draw from, and I was worried, Brendan, but I was throwing a bone right at the beginning. Boop! Right at the very beginning. Aha! I already know what I'm going to talk about, and it ties in partially with the book that I mentioned last week's episode that I'm reading right now, or revisiting, reading again, but you could really say I'm reading it for the first time because I have no recollection of this place as I'm going along, and that is John Bunyan's The Pilgrim's Progress. So let me set this up here. Harry Potter has a life that has been marked by destruction. You could say that he dwelt in destruction. His parents were murdered. He who must not be named tried to take Harry's very own little baby infant life. He grew up in a caustic environment as an unwanted stray dog begging for the scraps that fell from the Dursleys' table. He has a life of destruction. He's a product of destruction. He is a citizen of destruction. But that changed. As we saw in the first installment, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, which we covered on Christ in Cinema episode number 8, as well as the subsequent chapters in this epic tale. Now, in The Goblet of Fire, we see his journey away from destruction told in another way. So why do I keep using this word destruction, Brendan?
I don't know. You use it a lot.
Two reasons. The first is I see a clear parallel between this book, film, and the classic John Bunyan allegorical tale, The Pilgrim's Progress. But second, I see in the item, the portkey, a parallel to the cross of Jesus and an understanding of both points in light of Matthew chapter 7, verses 13 and 14, which is my key text, the only text that I have for this episode, and we'll talk about that more later on. But first, let's explore this, what I set up a little bit further. So Pilgrim's Progress. So what you have is the story is told by the writer, who is the dreamer, and he's on a journey, and he is tired, and he makes his way into a cave, and he lays down and to rest, and lo, he dreams a dream. I dream a dream. And so anyway, what he sees in it, he sees a man named Christian, and Christian is pacing back and forth outside of his house, and he's in agony, and he keeps looking, reading this book, and he has something that's on his back, a monkey on his back is what we would say. But this dreamer sees that it's a great burden on his back. And his family, Christian's family, is worried about him, and they think he's gone mad. He's gone mental. And so they're trying to get him, you know, to go in. They think that a good night's sleep would do him well, so they rush him into bed. You know, hey, go to bed. And he wakes up all the worse. And his family, you know, they they start chiding them. They're trying to snap them out of this. So they start, you know, making fun of them, start yelling at them, start ignoring them, whatever, doing anything. Whatever can we do to get them to snap out of this? And that is where that's where we find ourselves right now before he meets up with a particular person. Now, I saw upon a time when he was walking in the fields that he was, as he was wont, reading in his book and greatly distressed in his mind. And as he read, he burst out, as he had done before, crying, "What shall I do to be saved?" I saw also that he looked this way and that, as if he would run, yet he stood still because, as I perceived, he could not tell which way to go. I looked then, and I saw a man named Evangelist coming to him and asked, "Wherefore dost thou cry?" He answered, "Sir, I perceive by the book in my hand that I am condemned to die, and after that to come to judgment, and I find that I am not willing to do the first, nor able to do the second." Then said Evangelist, "Why not willing to die, since this life is attended with so many evils?" The man answered, "Because I fear that this burden that is upon my back will sink me lower than the grave, and I shall fall into Tophet. And, sir, if I be not fit to go to prison, I am not fit to go to judgment, and from thence to execution, and the thoughts of these things make me cry." Then said Evangelist, "If this be thy condition, why standest thou still?" He answered, "Because I know not whither to go." Then he gave him a parchment roll, and there was written within, "Fly from the wrath to come." The man therefore read it, and looking upon Evangelist very carefully, said, "Whither must I fly?" Then said Evangelist, pointing his finger over a very wide field, "Do you see yonder wicket gate?" The man said, "No." Then he said to the other, "Do you see yonder shining light?" He said, "I think I do." Then said Evangelist, "Keep that light in your eye and go up directly thereto. So shalt thou see the gate at which thou shalt knockest. It shall be told thee what thou shalt do." Now I saw in my dream that the man began to run. I need to get rid of this monkey on my back, this burden. I know I've just been told to flee the wrath to come. I know that I am condemned to die. And that gate is the answer for me. I'm on my way there. Now we find at the very beginning of the movie, going back to what I was describing with Harry Potter and this scene of that ramshackle mansion that is Tom Riddle's family home, and there we see a little Voldemort in there.
A little creepy thing.
Yes, with the Barty Crouch, and you have Wormtail there, and the caretaker sees a light in the window, and Harry's seeing these things in a dream, and sees the man go up there, and they kill the man, and Harry awakes from this dream, and he is in torment.
Harry! Harry! Are you all right?
Hermione, bad dream. When did you get here?
Yeah, you see it on his very visage, right? Mm-hmm. It's just, he's in torment. And so anyway, Hermione gets up Ron, well, tries to get up Ron. Ron's hard to get up here in this particular scene. And then we find them all following Mr. Weasley, who, by the way, is one of my absolute very favorite characters. I have so many because
good old Arthur.
Yes, I love Mr. Weasley, so they're on the road, they're on a journey, and I think that they may come up and meet someone much like Evangelist.
Ron, where are we actually going?
Don't know.
Hey, Dad, where are we going?
I'm the foggiest. Keep up,
Arthur. It's about time, son.
Sorry, Amos. Some of us had a bit of a sleepy start.
Stop! Why are you resting, you sluggards? But so they're on this road, on this journey, and then here comes Evangelist.
Yep.
Hey, I know the way to go. Here's the way that you need to go, and that way is going to lead up this hill.
Is it just over there?
Shall we?
Oh yeah.
We don't want to be late.
Come on, lead it in now. Get yourself into a good position.
Why are they all standing around that manky old boot?
That isn't just any manky old boot, mate.
It's a portkey.
Time to go!
What's a portkey?
Ready? After three. One, two, hurry! Three!
That manky old boot is like the wicket gate that Evangelist was pointing Christian to. Get there, and then, you know, the next step of the journey is going to be evident to you. They're going to tell you what to do. And he's transported when he finally gets to that gate, and he goes through some much hilarity ensues on his way to this gate in Pilgrim's Progress. But he finally gets to that gate, and when he enters in, things change. Things are a whole lot different, and it's much like what Harry experienced as they get to, you know, when they're transported from the, with this portkey to the Quidditch World Cup, and all kinds of wonderful things happen, and they land, and oh, Mr. Weasley had their tent set up and ready for him, but Harry's taken aback because his tent is like, they have to stoop to get into this little thing,
right?
And it looks like it's like the size of a doghouse,
yeah.
Right? What happens when he gets inside?
Excellent. Girls, choose a bunk and unpack. Ron, get out of the kitchen. We're all hungry.
Yeah, get out of the kitchen, Ron.
Feet off the table.
Feet off the table. I love magic.
It's totally, it's huge inside and comfortable and wonderful. And Harry exclaims, I love magic.
There's no such thing as magic. Oh,
Uncle Dursley, how did you get...
This is the second time we've done this episode today. I told you to tie him up.
He must have used a very powerful Confundus charm to...
There's no such thing as magic.
Oh, but Brendan, we've talked about magic before, and in the Harry, the Wizarding World, we agree that magic, at the very least, one way to look at it can be the power of the Holy Spirit, right? And it's like magic, and so when Christian gets to the Wicket Gate, and Harry gets to the old manky boot. They're both a portkey, and they're both like the cross. Oh, because it starts their journey. And what happens a lot of times when people first become Christians, is that it's magic. Wow, I'm saved. I know that my sins have been forgiven, and you have this elation, you know, and everything is wow. And then bad things start to happen. Hey, wait a second. Those thoughts that I used to have, I still have them.
Mm-hmm.
Those habits that I used to have, I still have them.
Mm-hmm.
You almost, sometimes people think they got sold a bill of goods. You know, because a lot of times people don't do them the courtesy of saying, hey, listen, you know, you're giving your life to God, and you are making a commitment with them. Now the real work is going to begin. Now God's going to do a work on you, and sometimes things get pretty bad. Sometimes things get worse before they get better. And that's what happens in this story, right? We know about the Triwizard Tournament and all the things that happen, and it all leads up. I'm going to skip all the way to the next portkey, which is the same as the first portkey, just looks a little bit different. Oh, it does, doesn't it? And so they get all the way to the cup in that maze, right? And so here's Cedric Diggory and Harry Potter. They grab that. It's a port key, but it doesn't take them where they think it's going to take them.
No.
Okay, it takes them to this graveyard, this sepulcher, and the other place that I was going to read out of Pilgrim's Progress, which I'm not going to, talks very much about this burden on Christian's back when he makes it to the cross, and the burden falls off and then rolls down into the sepulcher, and. So anyway, things seem to be bad and whatnot, but here's the great redeeming thing about Harry Potter and these port keys. So now he's locked in deadly battle with he who must not be named.
Mm.
In my best John Hurt voice. Okay.
That hurt.
Oh, man.
Boo!
They're locked in mortal combat, and Harry's holding them off. I mean, he's putting up a good fight.
Yeah.
At the very least, his wand is. Mm-hmm. Okay, and the Holy Spirit's fighting for him. This is magic. This is powerful magic. And just when things are the darkest, Harry is visited.
Harry, when the connection is broken, you must get to the portkey. We can linger for a moment to give you some time, but only a moment. You understand?
Harry, take my body back, will you? Take my body back to my father.
Let go. Sweetheart, you're ready. Let go! Let go!
Accio! And he makes it back. The key in that sound clip is Harry's dad, who comes to visit him. His parents are there. Cedric Diggory is there, and the Muggle caretaker is there. And his dad says, you can get back, but you must hold on to the port key. What's that port key going to provide for him, Brendan?
Life.
Life. That is the key. If we had a big ding, 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 ding sound, that is the key. That is what happens when you grab on to the port key. That's what happens when you get to the wicket gate. That is what happens when you cling to the old rugged cross on that hill far away. A symbol, an emblem of suffering and shame. It's not a glorious thing, the cross. It's ugly. It's brutal. And it is our portkey to life. Now, at the beginning of our journey, at the beginning of his journey, it's an old manky boot. On a hill far away stands an old manky boot.
On a hill far away stood an old manky boot.
The emblem. Yes. Right? And anybody would say, that's madness. That's what Harry said. What are they going up to this old manky boot? What's with this cross? That's what people in the first century would say. You are gathered around, rallying around the symbol of a cross? That is shameful. Yes, it absolutely is. But then at the end, when it comes time for life to live, it's a trophy. That cross is a trophy. It's beautiful. It is beautiful. Isn't it?
It is.
And that is what I want to put in your minds, dear listeners. And that is found in Matthew chapter 7, verses 13 and 14 from the New English Translation, which you all should be reading. Jesus says, enter through the narrow gate, because the gate that is wide, or the gate is wide, and the way is spacious that leads to destruction. There's that word again, Brendan, destruction. I mentioned destruction all kinds of times in my preamble to this whole discussion. And what I failed to tell you, here's the secret, is that Christian in Pilgrim's Progress was a citizen of the city called Destruction. It's never said why he was there, how he got there, where he came from. No. As far as we know, he was born and raised in destruction, just like every person is. Mm-hmm. That is the natural state. It's easy to get to because you're already there. Enter through the narrow gate, friends, that portkey, because the gate is wide and the way is spacious that leads to destruction, and there are many who enter through it. But the gate is narrow. And the way is difficult, Harry Potter. The way is difficult. And Dumbledore said that. The second best Dumbledore of them all said that in the movie trailer. The gate is narrow and the way is difficult that leads to life, and there are few who find it. There you go. There's your key verse, and you can focus on the I want to say Horcrux. Oh, that's a spoiler. You can focus on the port key as you're sitting on your double-decker couch with your friend watching Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Something else you can focus on.
Yes.
Is this little rift that we see in the friendship between Harry and Ron.
Aww.
They've been best friends ever since the first year. Now, sure, while other stories may have teased that these two comrades would have their troubles further down the road, we see things manifest for the first time in the Goblet of Fire, and it starts when Harry's name is selected by the goblet, and Ron gets a little jealous. Consumed with this jealousy, we can hear it in an argument in the Gryffindor dormitory.
How did you do it? Never mind. Doesn't matter. Might have let your best friend know, though.
Let you know what?
You know bloody well what.
I didn't ask for this to happen, Ron. Okay? You're being stupid.
Yeah, that's me. Ron Weasley, Harry Potter's stupid friend.
I didn't put my name in that cup. I don't want eternal glory. I just want to be... Look, I don't know what happened tonight, and I don't know why. It just did. Okay? Piss off.
Oh, man.
Feelings are hurt.
I know it. And this pushes Harry and Ron apart in the way we've all seen before. When two friends start going their separate ways because of jealousy, because of greed, of covetousness, anything that seeps into these types of friendships. And even as they try to get back at each other, we see them hanging out with new friends. Not like they weren't friends before, but they hang out with certain friends to avoid each other. Harry hangs out with Neville, and Ron hangs out with Seamus. But we can see in all these different scenes where they interact, they want to be back with each other. And we especially see the strain that it puts on everyone else, Hermione specifically.
Ronald would like me to tell you that Seamus told him that Dean was told by Parvati that Hagrid's looking for you.
Is that right? Well, what?
Dean was told by Parvati that... Please don't ask me to say it again. Hagrid's looking for you.
Well, you can tell Ronald...
I'm not an owl!
Well,
I'm not an owl.
That's right.
And ultimately and thankfully, Harry and Ron reconcile and revive their friendship after Harry defeats the Hungarian Horntail Dragon in the first tournament. And they show each other that they actually need each other.
Well,
they still need each other.
They do.
I reckon you have to be barking mad to put your own name in the goblet of fire. Come on, have you? Took you long enough. Wasn't there anyone who thought you'd done it? Everyone was saying it behind your back. Brilliant. That makes me feel loads better. At least I warned you about the dragons. Hagrid warned me about the dragons. No, I did. No, don't you remember? I told Hermione to tell you that Seamus told me that Parvati told Dean that Hagrid was looking for you. Seamus never actually told me anything, so it was really me all along. I thought it would be all right, you know, after you figured that out.
Who could possibly figure that out? It's completely mental.
Yeah, isn't it?
And we're back together in the world between Harry and Ron is, at the moment, put back to rights. And this whole scene makes me think of Matthew 18, 21 to 22. Then Peter came to him and said, Lord, how many times must I forgive my brother who sins against me? As many as seven times? Jesus says to him, not seven times, I tell you, but 77 times. And as the King James Version puts it, 70 times 7.
Yeah.
And the idea isn't to literally count out how many times you forgive somebody. It's to love them so much that you keep no record of their wrongs. And conversely, you forgive them as much as you love them. So much so that you don't even have to keep count of how many times you forgive them because you are going to forgive them for everything.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Jesus is speaking to people that about what citizens of the kingdom are like, right?
Right.
And how do we become citizens of the kingdom, Brendan?
By entering that narrow gate.
And how do we enter that narrow gate? By seizing. You take a hold of it. You accept it. You believe it. You internalize it. You are converted.
Yes.
Yeah. What else?
Oh, that's basically it.
Man, that's a powerful tools. Two powerful tools while you're sitting on that double-decker couch with your friends.
We got to get one of those sometime.
We do. We absolutely do. Okay, you ready to move on then?
Yeah, we got to.
There we go. Brendan, did we get any feedback? We got feedback from young Caroline Marshall. Now, in last episode, we mentioned that she had contacted us on Facebook and requested a review of the movie Gone Girl. And we weren't sure, did you want a Monday movie review or did you want an episode of Finding Christ in Cinema? What did she say to clarify on that?
Well, her clarification: if possible, I would love an entire episode of FCC devoted to Gone Girl. The book is just such a good story of an internal struggle within one woman that leads to complete and total chaos in the world around her, and the movie does an excellent job of staying true to the book. I, Caroline, only counted 13 changes and omissions, which is pretty good for a book-to-movie conversion. That's really good for a book-to-movie conversion.
Wow. 13 changes.
We're like 13 million with all the Harry Potter stuff. Anyway, hey.
So what we'll do is we will...
we'll wait till it comes out on DVD.
Yes.
That way we can get the sound clips,
yep.
And we'll do it from there.
So in the meantime, add it to...
the list!
Any other feedback from anyone?
Nope.
Let's move on. The lightning round! Take it away.
Well, since it is Halloween tomorrow, and my birthday, I want to talk about scary stories to tell in the dark.
Do it.
I will. Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark is an anthology collected over the years by Alvin Schwartz. And he published this, at first it was just one book, a very short children's style book, but then people wanted more. So he gave them more Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Well!
And people still wanted more, so he gave them Scary Stories 3, More Tales to Chill Your Bones.
Ooh. Hmm.
And this is a collection of like the simple campfire stories or sleepover stories where everyone turns out the lights and gets a flashlight and you try to scare each other. These are those types of stories. And as a storyteller myself, I think they're a wonderful resource for such storytelling events as I'll have Saturday night.
Yes! You talked about that last episode. Now, are there any stories in here at all that anybody would be able to say,
it's ghastly?
Well, if you weren't so inclined, I would suggest starting with The Big Toe.
Okay.
And Harold the Scarecrow.
Well, all right. So there you go. A couple of tips from Brendan and his lightning round. I wanted to talk about this featurette from that movie that we've been talking about called Into the Woods. And they posted a featurette the other day, and it was fantastic. I can't wait for this film, even though it has Johnny Depp in it.
But he's counterbalanced by Meryl Streep.
Oh, boy, is he. Oh, my goodness. You got to pull in the big guns. Okay, call up Meryl, see if we can get her to do it.
Right?
Yeah, and just looks great. Well, I was going to mention that and put a link to that, but I decided, no. The better thing to do is to remind people, you all have Facebook pages. So go ahead and look up Christ in Cinema, facebook.com/Christ in Cinema, and become a fan of our page because we post all kinds of things throughout the week, all kinds of content for you to follow. Now, as Facebook is wont to do, they won't show you things even if you liked a page, so you actually have to go and visit there and see, make sure you haven't missed anything, and then share it with your friends and whatnot. And one of the things is that Into the Woods featurette. We got the newest Avengers trailer on there. All kinds of stuff goes up there throughout the week. So that is my tip for this lightning round for you all on there. And we will give you other ways to contact us, because what we want you to do also is to let us know what Christian themes you found in Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. Like we said at the beginning, we left a large swath of untouched content in there for you to mine. Just let us know. Again, the links to contact us and interact with us are coming up in just a moment. But Brendan, what film are we going to talk about next time?
Up.
What?
Up.
Is that it?
That's it.
Up!
The Disney Pixar film with the balloons. You may want to grab a handkerchief.
Oh, yes.
Get your handkerchief/death catcher. if you need to wipe away those tears for the first 5 or 10 minutes. And this will be the third animated film. The first one we did was the first Toy Story.
Yes.
And then How to Train Your Dragon.
Yeah, we've been neglecting animated films, so we're going to rectify that and watch up next for the next episode. Also, real quick, in December, we want to cover holiday Christmas films. And so there's 4 weeks, we think, and for Finding Christ in Cinema. Brenda and I have two that are picked out. We decided that we're going to do a request from Ron of the Red Oaks is A Christmas Carol. We landed on the Patrick Stewart version of A Christmas Carol. Looking forward to that.
But we don't just want to stop at Patrick Stewart's version.
No, we are thinking that each Christmas,
each year,
we will
visit a different adaptation of Charles Dickens' classic ghost story.
Well, yes. Hey, there you go.
It is a ghost story.
And it is one of the most all-time beloved stories. And certainly one of the most beloved Christmas stories. So we want to make that a yearly staple. And the other most beloved of Christmas movies is...
It's a Wonderful Life.
It is. And that is a movie that we think that maybe we can visit that single movie every year.
Right.
And look at the... And I think that that would be a neat little tradition. But we need your help with the other episodes. Two other episodes. So contact us. Let us know what movies you would like us to watch and to find Christian themes in during the month of December leading up to the big celebration of Christmas. Anything else, Brendan?
No, man, that's it.
That's it. Well, everything that you find is going to be at Christ in Cinema, especially...
Well-mannered frivolity.
And we're part of the Great Commission Transmission Network, using new media and social networking to equip and encourage you to go into all the world and proclaim the good news to everyone. To find out more and to partner with us, visit us at gctnetwork.com/donate. You can get to the official website. ChristInCinema.com has links to all things that we do, all the podcast episodes, the Monday movie reviews, the links to all the social media that we do. You can sign up to the weekly newsletter there, and all kinds of good stuff at ChristInCinema.com. You can send email to us at FCC@GCTNetwork.com.
Call us up on the voice line at 507-407-GCTN. And for those without letters on the phones, that's 507-407-4286. And if you just want to listen to the podcast from your favorite podcast aggregator, you can look us up on iTunes. You can look us up on Stitcher. And as if you didn't like falafel.
Well, I don't like falafel.
You can look us up on TuneIn Radio. Just search them all for Finding Christ in Cinema.
And for all the content that we produce at the Great Commission Transmission Network, including the Theonauts and their brand new little mini episodes, get over to the official website at gctnetwork.com, and you too can be...
Babbling, bumbling band of baboons.
Anything else, Brendan Taylor?
I'm so glad Minerva McGonagall and Maggie Smith are part of the sound cart now.
And that is a wrap!
You are a sad, strange little man.
It's a man-hound! A man-hound!
There's no...
No, not him again!
Logic.
Whatever. No.
I'm a miracle man.
You are tuned in to the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission.
This is your Great Commission transmission
at gctnetwork.com. This is your Great